I'm Steve Chiotakis. This is Greater LA, KCRW's new show that connects you to the people and the places of Southern California. At the end of the Harbor Freeway, just across the Vincent Thomas Bridge, are the ports of Los Angeles and Long Beach. And right between those ports, at the appropriately named Terminal Island, is the spot where Southern California's cars go to die. Later in the show, we're going to be talking about the future of cars in LA, cars that come into the ports by the tens of thousands every year. But first, let's talk about the vehicles at the port that are going out, or the crumpled, broken pieces of them anyway.
Well, most of these cars, I think a good percentage, maybe 90-plus percent of the cars here in Southern California are going to have to pass through one of our shredders.
500 to 600 cars get shredded here every single day. Tony Cuevas is the one who, with the touch of a button, pulverizes those vehicles into oblivion.
We're across the channel from the port where we receive all the new cars. When I first started working here about 19 and a half years ago, I seen a lot of the old cars coming in, and now those are the cars we've been shredding for the last past 5 years. So you actually really do see all the new cars come in, and then you see all the cars come out of here shredded.
Shredded means just what you think it does, like that paper shredder that you have at home or the office. A giant mechanical claw, like the one inside the game you always lose at in the arcade. It takes a flattened car and puts it on a conveyor belt to get ripped into pieces. Inside the control room, Tony Cuevas sits in this large, important-looking chair behind thick, unbreakable glass with a bird's-eye view.
This is like Game of Thrones. You're in the seat.
Yeah, I'm in the metal throne right here, the iron throne, they call it, right?
And so, it swivels?
It swivels. I could look down. We have 10 cameras above, so I could be able to see the downstream, the infeed. I could see what the guys are feeding me.
You have a lot of power in that chair, don't you?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, you do. Look at all those levers and buttons. Oh, my.
It's like I'm flying a plane.
You don't let visitors operate that machine, do you?
Not usually.
Well, there's
a possibility.
Case. Really? Can I sit in the chair?
Sure. Yeah, we'll let you shred a car.
Oh, my God. I get to shred a car? Oh, I'm sitting in the Game of Thrones. Oh, it's comfortable too, Tony. So the arcade claw is picking up the smashed car.
Yep.
And he's going to put it
on the
conveyor belt.
Here it comes now.
All right, here it comes. Oh, there it is.
So now you could grab that joystick there.
Okay. This one.
And bring it down.
Bring it down.
There and forward. There, you just shredded your first car.
Wow!
There's another one coming right behind it.
Are you serious?
Just hold it like that.
Just hold it? Oh, my goodness. There it is. Oh! Whoa! Tony, you and I are taking cars off the road in Los Angeles. It takes a while to make a car.
And it takes me about 10 seconds to destroy it. That's another car.
Do you feel sorry for some of these cars? It's like, oh, I don't want to destroy this.
Has money in the bank for us. I see my bonus there going up the belt.
SA Recycling makes its money, about $350 per car, by selling its post-mortem bits and pieces to companies in Asia. Think Korea, Vietnam, India.
And so what do they become when they leave here?
It could be a number of things. It could be your new refrigerator, you know? It could be your new car. It could be anything.
For now, those bits are stacked up into piles. Piles of aluminum, piles of clean steel, or copper, or brass. China used to take a lot of that material, but it's not taking much anymore, partly because of a dramatic change in their import policy last year, and partly because of the Trump administration's trade dispute. Fernando Ruiz is the recycling plant's general manager. He has to figure out who to sell those piles to.
A year ago, we had to wait like a little bit longer, but...
Because of the tariffs.
Part of that, you know. And also, you know, that somehow China affects the market worldwide, you know. Sometimes the demand for this material decreases, and that's why we're struggling a little bit. But for the most part, our goal at the end of the month, we had to make sure we ship out everything.
So it's really affecting your bottom line here.
I will say so. I mean, and we're struggling. We used to have China for years and years, you know, and now, you know, we have to look for some other routes or some other places to sell our product.
For now, they're making this work, and chances are still good that someday that car you're driving, maybe while listening to me on the radio right now, will wind up here in Tony Cuevas' shredder.
And you see all those cars on those freeways, and you're stuck in front of one or in back of one, and you're like, what are you thinking when you come to this place every day?
I'm thinking pretty soon you'll be mine, right?
KCRW's tech and car guy, Todd Mesereau, who was there, by the way, on our little field trip at SA Recycling, is with us now. And Todd, you know, we look at all of the stuff that's there, the junk, the piles of what used to be cars, and whether it's a pile of aluminum, whether it's a pile of steel or busheling or whatever it may be, I think of how perhaps wasteful it is. We have so many cars on the road, and then they go there to die. And what do you make of all of that stuff?
Everybody likes new things, and the reality about cars is that technology does improve. So as much as I love an old car, and old cars are fantastic, the new cars have safety features, convenience features that the old cars just don't. So I do think that there is this great cycle, is an economic engine, and we are moving forward in some regard. But it's nice to go to that place and see this stuff not headed to a landfill, not being dumped in the ocean, but going back someplace to be put into something new.
And yet here we are in a changing time where perhaps we're not owning cars anymore. Perhaps we're using them to get around. Maybe they're driving themselves. Maybe it's an Uber or Lyft driver who's driving you. But things are changing in Los Angeles. How so?
Transportation in LA is changing in a lot of different ways. One of the most apparent is that the metro system is being built out. Some of the lines are more successful than others. The Expo line is a bright spot. And as the city grows and more lines are being built, I think in the long run, more and more people will use Metro.
But we're talking about getting to, and you just mentioned it right there, some of those stations are far flung, right? So you've got to, this isn't New York on the small island of Manhattan.
Correct.
Where there's a station just around the corner. This is like miles to get to a metro stop.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and everybody talks about the last mile problem or the last quarter mile. And that's where things like rideshare come in. You know, Uber and Lyft and others, Via is now in Los Angeles. The electric scooters, electric bicycles, and actually people are going to walk. I mean, people do walk in Los Angeles, as odd as that sounds to those of us in our cars.
But, you know, I'm really curious about this because we talk about the need for the autonomy of a car, right, to be able to get from one place to another.
Right.
Why are we still, I mean, I think about, like, all these ways by which we can get from one place to another in L.A., and including mass transit and including not using a car, and yet there are more cars, it seems, on the freeways than ever.
Well, it's baked into our American heritage, Steve. I mean, the ethos of America is individualism. When you're in your car, you're in command. You go where you want to go, when you want to go, unless there's traffic on the 405 or the 110. And, you know, yes, traffic is an issue in Los Angeles.
I mean, I think about just even from where we were today at the port of L.A. all the way back here to Santa Monica in our studio, it took me an hour and 4 minutes.
Yeah.
I mean,
It's a little bit of an issue. Traffic is definitely, and I think as the public transportation system improves, as ride sharing improves, the traffic issue is going to drive a lot of people to those alternatives. But the reality is, you may think Los Angeles is the worst traffic city in America. It's not. INRIX, this data site, cites Los Angeles as the fifth worst traffic city in America.
And who are ahead of us?
Boston.
Really?
Washington, D.C., New York, and in the world, we're lowly 47th worst traffic city in the world. Moscow is number one.
I don't think, but is that any solace for somebody who's stuck on the 605 right now between, say, Downey and Duarte?
Some solace, because they can call their friends in Boston and while they're sitting in traffic and go, ha ha, you're the worst, you're number one.
Todd Mesereau, our tech and car guy. Todd, as always, a pleasure.
Thank you, Steve.
The sun. Well, whatever you think of your transportation options, those cars, no matter who or what is driving them, will still be mass-produced and marketed. That will continue for generations. So the question is, what are those vehicles going to look like, and how are they going to change and adapt in the future? Aaron Robinson is editor-at-large at Hagerty Magazine. He's the former editor over a Car and Driver, and he's been following developments in the car industry for a long, long time, and he joins me right now. Welcome, Aaron.
Is 25 years a long time now?
That's a long, long time.
All right.
How soon, Aaron, can we expect these so-called autonomous cars to become a reality here in Southern California? Because we keep hearing about them. I don't see them.
Not soon.
Really?
Yeah. No, as a matter of fact, soon, we all thought in... as long ago as 2016, these were right around the corner. And a lot of car companies said, oh, we're going to have our autonomous model by 2020 or 2021. Yeah. Well, a lot of car companies have walked back. The latest one was Ford. Jim Hackett, who's the CEO at Ford, was really brought in because he had deep ties to Silicon Valley and this and that. He's now said, well, we will have something by 2021.
Did he say it just like that?
Yeah, maybe. He's basically said it's going to be in limited... a situation, a geofenced, which I think is the appropriate Silicon Valley term. It will basically be operating in a resort or a military base or something where the environment's very controlled. This is not a car that is going to, you know, come to your doorstep, pick you up, and whisk you to LAX. It's just that future may never happen.
All right. So if autonomous cars, if it's still kind of sketchy there, what else could we be expecting down the line, down the road, as it were, with cars?
Well, we're already starting to see some level of limited autonomy. For example, like a low-speed cruise control where if you're kind of rolling along in traffic up the 405, the car will kind of take over, and so you can kind of manage your affairs. But you're still there in the car with steering wheel and pedals and everything, and the car will tell you when it reaches, comes to a situation that it can't handle, and then you can take over. But again, where do you draw the line? The problem is if you're looking at your phone at Instagram and then suddenly the car tells you, I need you now. It takes a second for the human brain to, you know, switch gears from looking at people's baby pictures to now, oh, I have a situation.
Well, and I suspect CHP probably is not going to be cool with that either.
Probably the CHP will not be happy with that. Really, electrification is the next big thing that's happening in the automotive world. There's a lot of electric vehicles coming within the next couple of years. Whether there's a market for them, we don't know. And a lot depends on public policy, what happens, how the government encourages people to buy electric vehicles. Europe is committed. They've gone 180 degrees. 10 years ago, you couldn't engage a European car maker on electrification. They were all set on diesels. Asia is all into electric. They've never been interested in diesels at all, so they're full on into electric. China, of course, is the world's largest electric vehicle market. And now North America is the last, we're kind of the last holdout. And the political winds at the moment are not conducive towards the government favoring electrification. However, that could change. And if so, the car makers are saying, listen, we know you guys want electrification, but you got to do something to help us with the market. We're spending billions, literally billions with a B, and they're looking to the government and say, you got to help us because we're not sure there's a market there.
The one thing that, you know, when you go to a scrapyard and you see all these cars, you know, flattened cars, pulverized cars, all the metal and the aluminum and all these, you know, rare earth metals that are being shipped off to other places to be recycled. I mean, you look at units, the number of cars. Will we see that many cars 20 years down the road when you go to a scrapyard? I mean, do you think the number, the units of cars will stay the same?
Oh, yeah. I mean, unless there's a drastic reduction in the population, which I don't think any serious person is forecasting.
Seems to keep going up.
You know, we keep predicting that there'll be fewer two-car households, multi-car households, and the fact is the numbers keep shifting the other way, and you know, all of these big social changes that we keep expecting to happen just keep not happening. So chances are if you were able to get into a time machine and go forward 20 years, it would look a heck of a lot like it does today.
So no Jetsons, 1960s?
Well, you know, the people are showing stuff. The problem, of course, is that we're really not talking about flying cars. What we're talking about is flying taxis. You won't own them. You may be able to get in one, and it will take you across town or something.
It's like a drone, like a big drone?
They're going to be piloted. I mean, you know, what we're really running into is where you have Silicon Valley ideas coming into the transportation sector. If you look at the Silicon Valley models to develop technology and get it out there as quickly as possible and then have everybody find the problems with it. Well, it's one thing when you're working with your cell phone or an app or something, it doesn't crash, it's kind of annoying, but nobody dies. Now, what Tesla has tried to do and what other companies are trying to do is infuse a Silicon Valley model into the transportation sector. And that's where all of these flying cars and all the autonomous things. But when people's lives are at stake, it's obviously quite a different calculus. And so Tesla really has come the furthest in trying to see if a Silicon Valley model works. But the auto industry moves at a much slower pace than Silicon Valley, and it's for a reason. It's because lives are at stake. And ipso facto, a lot of money is at stake because there's big liability issues.
It's called litigation. Yeah.
Litigation, exactly. And so these kind of efforts to move transportation along and realize Blade Runner and all the futuristic visions that they have up in Silicon Valley, they're kind of running up against this resistance where transportation just doesn't work that way because the consequences of failure are so much greater. And that's kind of why we're seeing this, we were promised autonomous cars. Yeah, but it hasn't really happened. It's because the Silicon Valley model just can't push transportation as fast as it would like to go.
The future. Not for the weak or the impatient, is it?
No, well, that's a funny thing. What's the old saying? The future sure isn't what I thought it was going to be.
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly. So. Aaron Robinson, editor-at-large for Hagerty Magazine. Thanks, Aaron.
A pleasure as always.
Just two dope boys in a Cadillac. It's just two dope boys in a Cadillac.
All right, just ahead, the mayor is here talking about the future, talking about cars, of transportation, and the green earth. He wants Los Angeles and the region to lead the way with the city's Green New Deal. The mayor joins us next on Greater LA. But first, I want to take just a moment to say thank you for making this show possible. And let's keep it going, by the way. It is day one of the UnDrive, day number one, KCRW's unconventional pledge drive, which happens 30 seconds at a time. That means no interruption. That means we're not going to take a couple of minutes out of the schedule of important programming that perhaps you want to hear and ask you for money. So this is day one of it. Why not go online and pledge your support? Donate to the radio station to keep programs like this one on the air. KCRW.com/join.
Just two dope boys in a Cadillac. It's just two dope boys in a Cadillac.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
This is Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiotakis. You heard a lot, no doubt, about the Democrats' plan for a quote-unquote Green New Deal for America. But LA Mayor Eric Garcetti says his administration wants to tackle climate change on a more local level. He announced his own Green New Deal this morning, which sets targets for renewable energy, water capture, recycling, cleaner and more fuel-efficient buildings, more affordable housing built near public transportation, industrial emissions, food systems. It goes on and on. The mayor says it is big and it is ambitious, but since our focus today, of course, is on the future of cars and transportation, that's where I wanted to focus the conversation, and Mayor Eric Garcetti is with us right now. Mr. Mayor, thank you for helping us christen our new program.
Congratulations, Steve. Great to be with you.
Thank you so much. Now, I know LA has invested a lot of money in public transportation, the metro lines, the subway that was built, 25 years ago. Ridership, though, by and large, has been going down, and car ownership has been going up. So how does your Green New Deal turn those numbers around?
Well, I think there's three things that are going to change how we move. One is building out a better transit system that connects you with faster routes and lines to where you need to go. Today, it's kind of like the lottery. If you happen to live by the Expo Line and work downtown and live in Santa Monica, you've won the lottery. For most Angelenos, you still don't have a line close enough that it's worth it. And with gas cheap, you get in your car and suffer stuck in traffic. But two is the new technology that's really coming about. It's not just about what we spend and build, but how technology is changing, how vehicles can talk to each other. There's a lot of capacity on the road, even at peak traffic. About 92% of our streets are empty, But when, you know, cars and vehicles begin to communicate with each other, that opens up more capacity to move people more quickly through vehicles that are either autonomous or interacting with each other.
Did you just tell me, though, that 92% of our streets are empty?
At peak traffic.
At peak traffic.
Isn't that an incredible statistic? Well, at 95% of the time, our cars don't move, either because they're stuck in traffic or, more likely, they're parked someplace.
So people are in the same places. They're either in, they live in the same place or they work in the same place.
Absolutely. And you see, you know, the most inefficient way of getting around in transportation is the way we do today.
I think of the mindset, Mr. Mayor, about how people can go anywhere they want for free, right? You get in your car and you drive on the supposed freeway, even though you're probably stuck on it, any time of the day, anywhere you want to go. What can you do to better manage driving in order to improve traffic flow and reduce emissions? Is there any, I mean, I know congestion prices is a thought that's out there right now.
Sure. And Metro is beginning to study that. I like congestion relief more than congestion pricing, because the last thing I want to see is government addicted to a new source of financing that doesn't actually go towards moving traffic more quickly. But I do think it's really going to be technology as much as that pricing. And there's no question, when you see truck companies, for instance, I kicked off the congressional hearings on an infrastructure bill a couple months ago, and truck companies were saying, please charge us in per vehicle mile traveled, because we want our roads to be fixed. We want new effective highways to be built, et cetera, et cetera. We want better connections with our ports and our cargo containers. When you see the private sector beginning to say charge us, maybe that's a good place to start. You know, we have UPS trucks that get all sorts of tickets every single day when they deliver their goods. Can we more dynamically price the curbs? And here in Los Angeles, we're actually, whether it's a scooter company or talking to some of the rideshare companies, making sure that they now push their data to us, so that instead of us putting up parking meters and waiting for people to be parked at the wrong place, wrong time, and finding them, that we can actually dynamically price the curb and the streets of Los Angeles. But I've said, you know, for people who are dependent on cars, who are still working class, the last thing we want to do is add even greater fees to them, especially when this technological change is coming about.
You know, the one thing that I was thinking about when I was listening to your press conference today is the city only, your city has authority on this, and just in limited ways. So you're looking for partnerships, right? How do you do that and get everybody on board with this?
Well, I think Metro is the good countywide agency to do that, because you're right. You might drive from, you know, Santa Monica to Los Angeles to Beverly Hills to West Hollywood to Los Angeles again, and you cross many jurisdictions. And if you don't have unified policy, you know, it will maybe work in one area of town, but you saw this on the Wilshire bus lanes where they start and they stop, and so they're somewhat inefficient because of places where they're not permitted to go through an individual municipality. But we know that, you know, transportation is the largest source of air pollution. That unites us, and certainly has when we looked at things like the Air Quality Management District, which is a regional authority. So I think as we look at traffic, we can't do this on our own. This is not something that one city can mandate, even a city as large as Los Angeles, which is why I support Metro, which has representatives of all of our Board of Supervisor members, and also some of our smaller city mayors as well. That's the right way to me to make sure that everybody's at the table and that we look at this together and create a system in one city that happens to be chopped up into 88 pieces.
If you're trying to reduce the carbon footprint, how do you get more people into electric cars? Because they're still, in some ways, pretty expensive.
Yeah.
You know, are the incentives still there? I know the federal incentives are going away. I'm not sure about the state.
Two things. Yeah, the state one continues. The federal one seems to be winding down. But the used EV market is going to be very important. So we've talked to our Department of Water and Power about what we can do, just as they helped early on to get the EV market started. What can we do to get the used EV market started? Because that's a really important secondary source. And also mandating, as increasing numbers of people go into microtransit, as we look at our future buses and rideshare, mandating that those things be electric. So by 2025, we're not going to buy a bus that isn't electric. I want to see if companies are coming in saying we want autonomous rideshare vehicles, I want to mandate that 100% of those be electric. So that's a way to immediately, when those vehicles are driven seven times more than an average car, to boost those numbers in terms of the numbers of percentage of miles that are traveled in an electric vehicle. And we're not, you know, mandating it just has to be electric, whether it's hydrogen or other zero emission sources. We want technology to find what works best, but we're heavily investing in chargers around the city, already more than in anywhere else in the country, and that'll make it convenient, that'll make it cheaper, you save money on maintenance. Really, you know, as somebody who took an electric car out in 1997 and started driving one, I know the personal financial benefits as long as we can keep those prices competitive.
I know you're a busy man, so I want to thank you for being part of our first program here on KCRW, Mr. Mayor, Eric Garcetti.
Looking forward to being back. Thanks so much, Steve. Congrats again.
Thank you. And that's Greater LA for today. Coming up next is The Business on KCRW. Stick around. I do want to mention again, we're in the UnDrive. Thanking you, of course, for going online to kcrw.com/join and making it possible for us to create new programming, just like this one, this show, Greater LA, that's produced by Catherine Barnes. Our managing producer is the resident Norwegian himself, Christian Bordahl. Sonia Geis is our managing editor. The show is engineered by the inimitable Phil Richards. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Thanks for being here. And hey, let's do it again tomorrow, shall we?